welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 297 of the podcast. It's the 26th of November, 2016, as I record this. So today I have an interview with Sean Platt, who many of you will know from the self-publishing podcast and from books like Write, Publish, Repeat and his fiction with Johnny B. Truant and David Wright separately. And I recently read Dead City, one of their intelligent zombie thrillers, which was fun. Now, Sean and I mean, I know you hear, if you listen to the self-publishing podcast, you'll hear Sean in his SPP self. But when Sean talks to me, he's quite different, I think. And I kind of ask him a lot of questions about how things have changed for him at Sterling & Stone. And he's certainly one of those people that I really respect in terms of his vision and his ambition, I think, as well as his creativity. So in keeping with the discussion of my own business changes, it's interesting to see what Sean's up to and where he is heading. And of course, many of us start out with literally writing that first book. And as time moves on, we move into other things. So we talk about screenplays, about software for authors and lots more. So that interview coming up. In publishing news, I didn't pick up too much this week, but basically Kobo has a new country store view. So just like with Amazon and with iBooks, you can log on to the different stores, or not log on, you kind of change the view so you can see your book in other stores. Kobo now has a country store view, which is really useful because up until they did this change, you could only really see your books in your own country. And of course, many of us sell more books in other countries. So now you can kind of log into Kobo in Canada to see your book in the rankings there and that type of thing. So I'll link to that as ever in the show notes. But yes, that's interesting. Also, I mentioned last week I'm going to start doing a little futurist update in the introduction because, well, the news out there can be depressing, as you know, many of you will know. There's a lot of negativity in the mainstream press, but actually the world is getting better and more exciting things are happening. So I want to try and keep us upbeat and positive about the changes to come. And I've talked before about the 5 billion people coming online in the next 5 years as the rest of the world gets the internet. And that I started getting excited about that a few years ago when I read Peter Diamandis' book Bold, of which he released a new version last year. So I definitely recommend that book. Bold, B-O-L-D, not B-A-L-D, by Peter Diamandis. I also get his Abundance Report Weekly, which looks at the positive ways that technology is impacting the world. So that's really cool. But I saw on Singularity Hub this week, the race to wrap the earth in the internet is heating up. And this is a report on this idea, well, not idea, the fact that the 5 billion people in the world who don't have the internet right now are going to be coming online. And in the last week, SpaceX, Elon Musk's company, requested permission to launch over 4,000 satellites, which will create a global internet hotspot 200 times faster than today's average connection speed, which, I don't know about you, but I mean, I can remember when we first did dial-up modems. Like, I remember the, you know, beep and the, you know, how that was. And now, of course, like, I was just in a cafe for breakfast and we were like, oh, look, it's really slow. Oh, I just won't bother looking, you know, at whatever we were going to talk about. And so that kind of, oh, it's slow on your mobile phone. It's just hilarious now. But to have speeds 200 times faster than today's connection would be awesome. So for us, you know, for those of us in the West who have great connections, and not just in the West, those of us in developed countries with great internet speed, if you think about this extra 5 billion people who will have access to the internet, usually through cell phones, and I've talked before about the $5 smartphone that's come out in India, this is what it's going to be. It's most likely that in the next 5 to 10 years, internet will be free, handheld devices will be free, or at least really, really cheap, and people will be accessing through their devices and paying for content that, or paying for curation, or paying for something like that. I still believe there's a business model in this new world. You know, that's how my business runs. It runs on this new world. So that's very exciting. Also, Google Loon, which I've mentioned before, is now providing internet service in Sri Lanka and Indonesia, and is doing talks with operators in India. I think they were the first ones to do the train station in Mumbai as well. I seem to remember, I might be wrong there. But they are planning this ring of balloons. That's why it's Google Loon, which is kind of cool. They don't look like party balloons, obviously. But there's some really cool stuff happening to bring the internet to the rest of the world. And why I think this is good for indies, I've mentioned before, indie authors have a really good chance to price our books at a price that readers in other countries can access. So, for example, you can publish your book in America at $4.99, but you can also price it in Indian rupees so that people in that market can buy your book. And I think that's really exciting. Many traditionally published authors have not got the chance to, you know, say, publish an ebook in Nigeria, which you can do through Kobo, or to sell in Brazil, which you can through Amazon, Kobo, iBooks, etc. So there are lots of exciting possibilities in the next few years. And as I said before, I literally feel like, I think Jeff Bezos says this, every day is day one or something like that. I'm always feeling that this is day one, that when people say, oh, you know, it's just not possible to do this, that or the other, it's like, no, don't be crazy. You know, so things are a little bit overheated in America. What about everywhere else? I know it seems that America is everything at the moment because of the various news reports, but it's not. There's all kinds of exciting things happening everywhere else in the world. So stay positive, everyone. That is my kick up the proverbial this week. And also, I'll link to Peter Diamandis' book. I'll also link to the World in 2025 post. And that is the article, which is 8 predictions for the next 10 years. And that really shapes my own thinking on this topic. And I keep meaning to write a version of that post for authors. So, yeah. There you go. On personal news, I spoke in London this week at the ALCS, the Authors Licensing and Collecting Society. Now, this is one of those interesting groups, I guess. They collect money due to members for secondary uses of their work, which includes things like photocopying, cable retransmission, which I'm not even sure is a thing anymore, digital reproduction, educational recording. This type of income is typically made up of small transactions, which are difficult for individual writers to monitor, but can be tracked by ALCS using our sophisticated database. I'm reading from the website there. And so I've just joined, but they really find money for people whose books have probably been around a lot longer within traditional publishing. So if you've been publishing for over 10 years and you're not a member of ALCS, I would go and check that out. Because, you know, I know a couple of children's authors, for example, indie children's authors who are going to get some money from them, because often children's books are used in schools or libraries, that type of thing. So this is a great, and it's free. It's basically free in inverted commas, because although it costs, I think, £35, that gets taken off the first payment that you'll get. So essentially it works out free. Now, the average age in the room where I spoke on a panel was probably over 60, maybe even a bit higher. So I was expecting a little bit of pushback when talking about making money as an author in the digital age, including self-publishing and exploiting rights in other territories. But people were very keen to hear more. And so I was really encouraged by this. And I felt that perhaps the British author establishment, which has been traditionally very negative towards self-publishing and this type of author empowerment, well, it's felt very negative to me. It looks like things are really changing. So I'm very excited about the possibilities, and also that I think, you know, my mission, I was talking to someone, you know, my mission is to empower authors. I mean, that I think that really is what the Creative Pen is about, and what my nonfiction side of things is about. It's like empowering you to, you know, well, just to value your writing. And so I'm very excited about the way things are going. Also, I guess in other personal things, I'm almost ready to announce the name of the small press, and I want to build the website first. So I'm getting there, and I'm looking at, I've been interviewing a couple of people, and I've got some more interviews next week, not for the podcast, but for my own knowledge. So, and I am going to, in the next couple of months, I'll write a blog post on from indie author to small press publisher, because a number of you have emailed me to say that you are very interested in this too. And what's the difference between what I'm doing now as an indie, a professional indie with lots of books, to a small press publisher. So I'm really looking at that and how things are changing and what I want to do next year, and obviously with a bigger focus on print in 2017. So yeah, I'm really interested to get into that. I think because of these big plans I've got, I'm spending a lot of time writing, sort of winnowing down the to-do list to some big strategic things. So, for example, you know, the name and the logo and the website for the small press are not necessarily things that will make me money right now, but they are building up a new brand. So it's a very important thing to do, but it's taking longer than expected, as usual. things like I've been working with my VA Alexandra on the formatting for my non-fiction books on vellum. Doing the fiction was really simple because most fiction novels don't have masses of formatting, but non-fiction has a lot more formatting. So we've been working on that, and just lots of kind of admin-y tasks, but things that I'm really, that are big picture admin tasks, which are quite exciting. That's kind of my personal stuff. So thanks to everyone who emailed to help with the podcast production. I really appreciate your enthusiasm, and I'm actually really stunned by the level of accomplishment in the audience. I got emails from loads of people who, you know, made it very hard to choose who to work with. But I want to say welcome to Dan van Workhoven, who will be doing the audio side of the podcast from next week, when I'll be talking about productivity for creative people with Mark McGuinness. So next week, you'll be getting a more professional audio. Thanks also for all your emails and tweets this week. Thanks to Joe Whelan for his pictures of the Tallahatchie Bridge and for giving me that earworm. And he's just given it to me again, because as soon as you say Tallahatchie Bridge, you know, that song comes into your head. But I'd never seen pictures of it. So thanks for that, Joe. NT Jenks says, publishing my first book while listening to the podcast, which I always love to hear, that people are doing those kind of more admin-y publishing jobs while listening to the show. Jules sent a gorgeous picture from Hawaii. Aloha, listening to your podcast from Maui this week. Thankful to be 30,000 words into NaNoWriMo. Fantastic. Brittany Fichter sent me a lovely picture of the cake she was decorating for Thanksgiving, and also says thanks for asking Gabriella Pereira about her editing process, which was super helpful. Angerad Thompson-Rees says, oh my goodness, so good. I've gone from hating formatting to loving it with vellum. Thank you for the heads up on that. And of course, if you want to try vellum, it is amazing. Go to thecreativepen.com/vellum, and that is my affiliate link. Okay. Erin Johnson says, listening to the podcast while doing dishes lately, learning so much about writing and publishing and feeling excited. Awesome. And I do find that over the holiday period, we get a lot of people listening to the backlist. It's like I usually get an email, at least one email over Christmas, with someone who's discovered the podcast and is listening to all the episodes. And since we're coming up for 300... that is quite a lot of backlist. So yes, thank you so much if you're new to the show and you're working your way through several hundred episodes. Abigail Osborne, just setting up my mailing list thanks to your advice. Really enjoying the show, although my cat is feeling neglected. Sent a picture of a lovely cat who does not look neglected. And finally, Emily S. Organ sent me a picture of her awesome Dr. Martin boots and said, your podcast last week reminded me to get out my flowery DMs for the winter, best foot wherever. And in fact, last weekend when I spoke in London, Henry Hyde wore his special pair of Dr. Martin shoes, which were very cool, very Renaissance green, I seem to remember. So yes, I also went down to the shop earlier, and I have found a pair I want to buy for the winter, some kind of shiny red really almost black red, you know, not the oxblood ones. No, I know what some of you are thinking. Not the oxblood ones. These are kind of more a deeper shade. So yes, looking for some winter ones because my flowery ones are kind of canvas and not warm enough. Anyway, enough on footwear. So today's episode is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, and I'll play a word from them in a minute. I'm also thrilled that Mark Lefebvre from Kobo will be joining me for anniversary episode 300, which is only a couple of shows time, and we'll be talking about how things have changed in the last 2 years since episode 200, which was in November 2014. And it is amazing how much has changed. Now, I also wanted to mention, like someone said to me the other day, oh, you promote Kobo all the time because they sponsor your podcast. And I actually said, it's the other way around. The reason why Kobo sponsor the podcast is because I was a fan of Kobo. And over time, because I was talking about it and promoting Kobo, because I've been a fan of going wide since always. Like, I've never been someone who has wanted to rely on one company. So I started promoting Kobo and, you know, met Mark at events and, you know, was a promoter of Kobo, and then they decided to sponsor the podcast. So I wanted to make that clear. And also, you know, I do have affiliate links, you know, this is a business, but I only promote things that either I use personally, and of course I publish on Kobo Writing Life, and I do use Vellum, and I, you know, everything that I put out there are things that I use myself and I can recommend with hand on heart honesty. So I really wanted to just say that, because when this person said it this week, it was with a sort of tone of voice like, oh, you're selling out. And I like making money. You guys know that. I'm an ambitious businesswoman, but I will never compromise what I believe for money. And there are plenty of people who have wanted to pay far more money to sponsor the show and pay for posts on the Creative Pen, who are companies that we will not mention their names, but they are considered a ripoff for authors. And I will never do that. So I hope that helps anyone who is thinking that, because no, I will never do that, I promise. And also, actually, I've had a few people lately who have emailed me and said they've used a certain editor who's been on my editor's page, or have used a service that I've recommended, or have found an older post of mine where I've recommended somebody and then things have changed. And so I guess that's the other thing, is make sure that if I'm recommending something, it's within the last year. So that's my caveat. If I recommended something in 2014, chances are things have changed. So if you're in any doubt, email me and I'll tell you whether I still recommend them, because things do change. And, you know, I will change things up I'll remove people from my editor's list or my cover designer list if I get bad feedback from other people. So anyway, I just wanted to get that out there. Right. This corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a massive thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. Thanks especially to new patrons this week: Gavin Collinson, the Intronaut podcast with Jay Thorne, which is the podcast for introverts. Fantastic show. Marjorie Solomon and Taryn Blackthorne. Thank you, everybody. And thank you to all of you supporting on Patreon. I really appreciate that support. It demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And of course, you guys replaced the other corporate sponsor. So awesome. And if you want to support on Patreon, you'll get the extra monthly Q&A audio. And you can support the show with even just a couple of dollars a month, less than a coffee a month. And the November Q&A show went out last week. So, yeah, there you go. You can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Thank you. Here's a word from our sponsor, and then we'll be into the interview.
Hello, creatives. This is Mark Lefebvre, director of Kobo Writing Life. Digital bundles and box sets continue to be a popular way for authors to offer even more value to their fans. And since Kobo Writing Life doesn't have a cap for the 70% royalty, meaning you can price above $10 US without losing most of your margin, authors are able to benefit from this. They can offer their readers great value and still earn decent money. In the past 6 months alone, we've had many authors earning significant revenue by creating box sets in the mid to high teens and even north of $20. Kobo customers love that, and our merchandisers are able to use them in a lot more promotions. But a quick tip for our merchandising team regarding your digital box set bundles. At Kobo, there's a strong preference for 2D or flat book covers rather than the three-dimensional ones, especially for features where the rectangular standard book cover look fits better in our main page promotions in our email blasts. For more tips like this, check out the Kobo Writing Life blog and podcast at kobowritinglife.com. And now back to our favorite podcast host and yours, Joanna Penn.
And today I'm back with Sean Platt. Hi, Sean.
Hello.
It's great to have you back on the show. Now, just in case people don't know who you are, I'll just do a little introduction. Sean is one of the three partners behind Story Studio Sterling & Stone, publishing a ton of different books in multiple genres and co-hosting the self-publishing podcast along with Johnny B. Truant and David Wright. And their successful books include Write, Publish, Repeat, Invasion, Yesterday's Gone, amongst so many others, it's very hard to do an introduction. But Sean, many people will listen to your show, but it's been 2 years since you were last on the Creative Pen, which is...
Wow, I find that hard to believe, actually.
I know, it's, the time...
It feels like yesterday, yeah.
Time flies. But Sterling Stone is a much bigger company. Things have really changed. So give us a bit of an update. What has changed for you in terms of your role and what you're working on now?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's changing really fast, actually. Like really recently, within maybe the last month, Johnny and I were talking, and a year ago we had a conversation where it was like, okay, we're forming this company, like we're partners, and we've treated things really much like they're the same, like we're the same people. We make decisions at the same time in the same places, and we're on the same all the same calls. And during this walk, we realized that's kind of silly. Like we fought it in the beginning, you know, we're just, okay, there's two CEOs, we're co-CEOs, but a CEO is a very different person than a COO. And, you know, we just wanted to share in that space, but it was the wrong thing to do. And as soon as we decided, okay, you know, my job is to kind of like lead the company and his job is to kind of make sure that I do everything right and that it gets done. And so we've really like leaned into those roles. And so we're getting actual things done faster than ever because he's fantastic at seeing that picture and having the team to, you know, dot all those I's and cross all those T's. I'm so much messier than that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it was a joke in a company meeting that we had a couple of weeks ago that got everybody laughing quite hard for quite a long time when he said, "Here's Sean, idea, ? Profit." Right. And there is some of that, right? I clearly see it in my head, but that doesn't mean, and I do make the mistake often of assuming that the people around me can read my mind. Mm. And like, they're on the same page as me and they're getting it. And I know I'm saying like a lot of things that are probably like, I'm taking it for granted that they totally understand what I'm saying. And so that's not always the best, but now we have different filters and I can do, and I'm aware too, like I know what I need to work on. So I always want to improve my communication. And when I have several people saying, okay, I didn't quite understand that third thing because the seventh thing is crazy, right? And so I have to explain the third thing. So the seventh thing is less crazy at least. And that's really changed. So my job lately has been kind of to think and to slow down a little bit and actually strategize. And that's been just I've never had more fun. Like it's great. And Christine kept slacking me during a work week of a few weeks ago. We need to give you more time to think. This is great. And so, I think things are getting more oiled. I think we all can contribute our best value if we're in the right places doing the right things.
And it's so good to hear that. And when I heard Johnny's Almanac, I was like, this is so what you guys should be doing. It's exactly the right thing. And I emailed him and I kind of congratulated him on it because yeah. I was just like, that must be so. But it must be so hard for both of you. Now, I'm not in the same place as you are, obviously, because as we've talked before, I don't aim to have a massive company with all
no,
these
you're,
people.
You're so sane. No, you're so sane.
But in the last year, you know, I've been working with my husband. And also, I've increasingly felt, gosh, I wish I had a COO. Like, if I had someone who would do these things, then I could spend more time like with the creative side. But so what I wanted to ask you, I mean, what you're doing is on a much bigger level, but how have you dealt with your internal conflict of like, I don't want to give this up, or external conflicts with people because you've had to explain yourself and you know, like I have to explain myself to other people to try and get them to understand. So how are you dealing with that? And also that letting go, I guess.
Yeah, those are really good questions. Okay, let's do letting go first, because I think that that is hard. That is hard for creative people. It's hard. You built this thing and, you know, you want to make it all better, right? But I really like, as much as I like that, and I do, like, I want to hold on to, you know, many of these things. In fact, my friend Danny, we were talking a couple of years ago, and he's like, you're really... And Johnny said this for years too. Like, you're touching every part of the company. Like, is that sustainable? Is that smart? You know, right. Of course it's not. But I said, well, I like editing every word. Mm-hmm. Like, as long as it's my company, like, I want to have my fingers in the clay. Like, I want to be a part of what we're, even if my name isn't on it, my name's on it. And so, like, that's important to me. And so, But I'm doing those things now. Like, we are grooming things to where they can operate without me. And I think I'll always be a part of Realm and Sands and Collective Inkwell. Like, I'm going to be intimately involved with every single page of those books forever. But there are other authors who could come on board and be a part of the Sterling and Stone ecosystem. And I think that we're really leaning into that. And so I love building the systems for that. That makes me really happy. And so... it's not, I don't feel like it's a loss, because I feel like I'm filling the bucket with something else. Okay, now I'm going to get to go do these other things that I would have never had time to do. And I keep filling my plate with more and more exciting things. And I'm so looking forward to the many, many things that we're planning for 2017 that would not have been possible if I were still hanging on to these other things. Like, I feel like I'm allowing myself to grow, and then the company can grow, and, you know, we can all grow because of it. And that's very exciting to me. But also, it's the building of systems, which ever since I was a kid, like when I had the flower shop, I used to go and get all the, you know, remnants out of all these different empty buckets at the end of the day and divide them into three. And it was called a setup. And like, here, now you have to make these bouquets because we have to turn this stuff fast. And I like creating a system, and I like teaching a system, and we're slowly figuring out our systems, and we're going to be able to actually get, you know, like SOPs. We'll have actual, like, a real operating business, standard operating procedures that are repeatable. And we're really moving in that direction. And it's amazing to take these systems that actually work in a brick and mortar sense and marry them with the creative, like the art that we're creating and the experiences. Like, we're trying to create more experiences, and, you know, being able to do that with systems in place, it is what creating magic is about.
Yeah, no, and it's really, it is super that you're doing that. And you've maybe just also talk about how you've recruited from your community, because, like, for example, on a much smaller scale, people listening, if you want a virtual assistant, which is where many people start with this kind of letting go of stuff, you know, mine, Alexandra, is from my community, and you've also recruited from your community, haven't you? So what are your I guess recommendations on hiring, because you're growing so fast, and hiring can be the biggest issue with indies especially.
Yeah. Okay. There's two parts to that, of course, because I never have one part to anything, right? I think that hiring from the community is for us. Like, this isn't necessarily true for every industry, but for us, like, community is so important, and understanding who we are is so important. Like, I wouldn't want to go out and hire a like PR person, because that's not the same. I'd rather hire somebody and bring them into the team, have them all bond with us, really know who we are, and then actively go out and seek PR. Like, I would just want to handle it from that angle, because I think who we are is as important as what we're doing. And so I want to make sure that as time unfolds, we're really giving that the right intention. And I think intention is really important. When you're playing like a pretty big game, it's important to think long term and what are we trying to do? And bringing people in from the community who've kind of been there, you know, from the beginning, like our customer service person, Heather, like, she's awesome, right? And she's been listening since the second show. And so she's heard all the jokes, like, she gets our dynamic, and it does help. Like, it means that she knows us in a way, and it makes the onboarding just more natural. And we also have like a really systematic hiring process that we're going to be using that's like actually developed and on loan to me from somebody who knows how to do these things much better than I do. And so we're getting better and better at those processes. And And I love it, but it is a little more painful than just the making stuff. Making stuff is always more fun, but you know, I says making a family, making a really amazing business. So it's part of the making process.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But it's a scary part for a lot of people. And I know it's like one of my big issues is letting go of stuff. And so you guys are really good examples in that way, because you're now letting go of more. But you did talk there about like who we are and the brand. And one of the things that you and Johnny particularly have done from the beginning is say, we're going to, you know, we won't be boxed in to any genre. We're going to write whatever we want, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So, you know, and now it looks like when you go to Sterling & Stone website, it is much more in imprints. Are you at the point where you wanted to be when you made that decision, as in you've now got these clear, and how do you recommend other authors go in terms of niching genre?
Yeah, great questions. So no, I'm not happy, but I'm really close. Mm. Like, we're getting there, right? It's iterative. What we had is a big, scrappy, just terrible mess. And Christine, who is like a godsend to the company for sure, because she speaks, it's exactly why bringing from the community makes so much sense, because she knows who we are inside and out. So when she's writing copy for us, like, it does its job so much better than, you know, like any like copywriter out there. It doesn't matter how good a copywriter you are if you don't know your people, mm-hmm. right? But the same person who is, you know, writing the copy is spending time in the Facebook, right? Right. So the Facebook, I sound like my grandma. He's in the Facebook. Right. So it's just that community element is just so important. And she's like remapped out all of our autoresponders, because as much as she's into the indie publishing fiction world, she also has a copywriting and a marketing background. And so having her go in, and we're just reshaping all of our funnels and getting everything in place and completely revamping the website. Like, we're going to have daily content and it will be strong. There's some stuff that's just too early to talk about publicly that we're doing for next year with the blog that is very, very, very cool.
How does that, in terms of advice for other people around genre, because I think
So the biggest thing that we had to put into when we built the site was that right when you go there, it says, are you a reader or are you a writer? Right. And that is just so fundamental, because we do have two very different audiences that we're trying to send to the same destination. Mm. And that's kind of like suicide for any kind of like,
that's why I initiative. Have two.
Right. It is very, very difficult. So you just have to always think about the user journey. What is their experience when they land on the page? What is the very first thing they see? And they have to immediately understand who you are. I totally feel your pain, because it is the exact same problem. Are people coming to you as Joanna, or are they coming to you as JF, or, you know, what order? And can you take one and convince them that the other is awesome also? And so it's a juggling act for sure. But I think you almost have to think of it as user interface, right? Like, what is the customer journey? You have to know where people are coming in, so then you know where to send them. Now, when you have so much like we do, I think that the rules change. Mm. But I think that you actually have a fairly simple thing, because you have this kind of fiction or nonfiction, right? So you could actually do a very simple parsing when somebody lands on your site and they go here or they go here. If you're a romance author, say, and you've got, you know, like a few different genres, because a lot of romance authors do that, right? They want to write in a few different genres. Then do you like this? Do you like this? Do you like this? And then send people to that space. Right. Mm. Send them to, okay, I like paranormal romance. Then you click on there, and that's all the options that you get. And after you go through there, you can go to another part of the site, but you're being led there. So you're making sure you're just more aware of what your user is going to see at any given time, rather than just letting them blindly fumble about. And that's something that authors don't think about. Like, they're not web designers, so they're not thinking about that. They're authors, and they're thinking about, I want my ideal reader to see all of these books at once and love me completely. Yeah. And not have to make any decisions.
No, I totally agree. Well, what's interesting, one of your imprints here, so you've got sci-fi and you've got the Invasion series. Now, you have said that is written to market, and it's done incredibly well financially. And I've had Chris Fox on the show talking about this type of stuff. So would you say this is the most successful book? And what are your tips for writing to market? And how does that differ to some of your other more, I guess, for love projects?
Yeah, great questions always. Written to market, I think if you can crack the nut, it is incredibly fun. So I love the way Invasion ends. I've said publicly it's not my favorite of our books before, because it's not. Like, it's just, it's not. Like, I like The Beam a lot more in straight sci-fi.
Me too.
right? It's just, it's better. But Invasion sells like 10, 20 times better. So, and it also, like, The Beam is 10 times harder to write. So you've got this project that takes 5 or 6 times the length of time Invasion wrote very quickly. Like, I'm almost embarrassed to say how quickly we put the original Invasion together, considering what it's yielded. And so that's very attractive to have a couple of projects like that. And I'm not so snotty that's like, oh, I can only make stuff that's perfect. Not that Brits are all snotty, or even though that was a good Brit accent.
No, it was terrible.
Right? Okay. So it's like, I want to entertain people. And I'm smart enough to see at this point that there is like a direct relation to how awesome I think something is versus how commercial it is. And so I'm perfectly comfortable with that now. Like, okay, whatever. We're going to, you know, Invasion was very much written to market. And even with like kind of the wink, wink, nod, nod, keyword like titles for the whole entire series, right? Like, that to us, we were baking marketing into our art, and that was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Now, since then, we've really leaned into it. So we want to make our prestige projects, and we are not going to tap the brakes on that. Like, that's really important to us. We'll hit at least one each year. And when we're all caught up and we've closed all of our boxes because we've opened too many, and once those are all closed, we'll have more of those because they are more creatively rewarding. But in the meantime, we're seeing how wide we can crack that nut. And we have several projects and several different genres that are very intentionally written to market that are coming out next year. And they're tremendously exciting. And so my advice is find something that you are excited about. Because if I wasn't excited about these projects, I'd be kicking rocks. But like, every single one of them is just awesome. And we were able to do it by boxing ourselves into this very narrow constraints. Like, we were looking for very specific openings with which to write our books. Like, okay, this is our audience. This is exactly who we're going for. This is our genre and our subgenre. And we just made sure that we picked like ideas that really resonated with us, but used this little sample to pull from. And the projects that have resulted from that are a ton of fun to write, and they feel really commercial. They feel like there, our mantra was, we have to out invasion. And I think we're doing that. And so, but I don't think it's possible without enthusiasm. So I think people really need to not look for a vulnerability in the marketplace, but look for, you know, an area where there's opportunity where they could write something that they're really passionate about. And I think as long as you handle writing to market that way, and I mean, that could be all you do. Like, there's no judgment at all. For me, I would want more variety than that. So I want to, you know, do prestige projects that I care about mixed with that. But whatever, I think it's really fun, and I'm having a grand time writing to market.
Yeah. And I think taking it kind of less seriously seems to be the approach there. Like you said, it's fun. And also, you're an entrepreneur and a creative. It seems like a creative project in a way. And I mean, I've been quite resistant to it. But since talking to Chris and hearing you guys, I'm like, why am I resisting this so much? Like, I write slower than you guys, so I can't choose as many projects per year. But did you have that resistance as well to it?
No, I didn't, because I just saw it as fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I mean, what's the worst that can happen? We wasted a few months. But I mean, we were kind of forced into it, which is interesting. So we've recently done this apprentice project, right? And so this is the books that I'm talking about are a result of that project, because we had put out these guidelines, like, okay, this is how we would structure. If we were trying to do Invasion with a lot of intention and we were writing to market, these are the rules that we would follow. And so we had this group of apprentices, and we had to set the example. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of funny, because there were several moments on a couple different projects where if it had just been us, if it had just been me and Johnny, for example, we would have been like, okay, that's good enough. Like, let's go. But because we had a live audience who is watching us, and we're like, no, we have to follow the rules. Like, it can't just be like, listen to what we say. Like, we have to follow the rules. And so we really forced ourselves into the box, and it was the best thing ever. Like, we ended up with the most complete outline we've ever had. And we really knew the story before we started, and we just had a really good time. We actually did this thing where we called it a table reading, and we took the beats and just like talked about the whole story start to finish. And so we really knew it when it was time to tell it. And that was fun. And it was born from playing the rules. So there was a little bit of resistance, but I think that because we had an audience, we couldn't succumb to it. Like, we were forced into following the rules, and it ended up making the art better and more fun to produce.
And more money.
Yeah. Right. And I think these are really commercial ideas. Yeah. So, yeah.
Fantastic. So you mentioned table reading there, and I've been to a few screenwriters conferences, and table reading is something that they often do with scripts. And you've announced you've sold your first screenplay, which is awesome, yeah. Which, you know, you. Congratulations. And of course you admitted it was quite a small sale. It's not like seven-figure Hello Hollywood.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not adding a wing onto the house or anything. It's done.
Yeah,
right?
And it started.
Yeah, and I think that that's one of those things. It's like, what do I do after I write a book? Write another one, right? Like, it's not. I'm not done. I'm not retiring from the screenplay business. But when you want to sell a screenplay, that's the first thing they ask you is, what else have you optioned?
Yeah. So,
being able to have that door open, I think was good for us. And it was good for Justin Sloan, who, you know, was the partner on that first project. So it was just everybody wins.
Yeah.
Right.
What have you learned? I mean, cause I'm really interested. I've tried and failed a number of times to write my own screenplays from adapting my own work. So what have you found to be difficult about adaptation, or are you writing the story first as a screenplay from now on, for example?
Yeah, no, I don't think I'm ready to write, from scratch. Like, I will be someday, but right now we have so much inventory. Like, we have so many things that could be adapted. It doesn't make sense to go outside, right? Like, okay. Oh, because I always think, oh, I would love to see that as a movie. Oh, I would love to see that as a movie. And there is something, I know this sounds silly, like this is more the artist than the businessman in me talking, but there is something beautiful about that transference. And when I'm done with the screenplay, it is a movie. Like, whether it gets made or not, it exists in this other medium. And I made that happen. And there's something magical about that. So just like, that's almost enough for me. Like, I mean, not quite, like, I'd rather sell it, but there is something very sweet about that process. And so I wish I had a little more time to do it. I was doing it real regularly, and I've totally pulled back just because there's so many other things going on. But I have a list of ones I want to hit. As far as what I've learned that you just have to do it. It's like writing. It's totally different. If you're expecting it to be the same at all, it's just not. You know, I write fast, but I mean, I'll spend several minutes on every single page of, you know, a screenplay, despite there only being a couple hundred words, right? It's just, it's a lot of thought. But it's an exercise, and it really does teach you. I mean, there's value in doing it because you learn, for sure. But I think it also makes you a better long-form writer because you're understanding how to truncate things, and you're understanding perspective and dialogue in ways that you just don't otherwise, but you're right there on the ground with it. So I feel like I got to be a better writer just by writing screenplays. So I think it's a great exercise, but it's also like, how much time in the day do you have? And like, okay, I'll just add writing a screenplay per quarter onto the list, right? Which I've actually done and failed. So,
well, yeah, we haven't finished the list of the many things you're working on. So another thing that's happened this year is taking the nonfiction side of Sterling and Stone more seriously. Which is really funny because many people would have thought that you were already taking it seriously. I mean, you write, publish, repeat is a bit older now, and you know, you've got the podcast and everything. But what was the shift in your mindset around doing both genre, you know, both fiction and nonfiction?
Well, we always did both, but it was almost like we were very proudly, almost arrogantly, I would say, no, we're a fiction company, and like, we're not going to sell stuff. And, you know, it's a little silly. Like, we did our event last year, and we even like proudly said, as long as it breaks even, we're fine, which like, okay, awesome, like be a martyr, right? Like, but we did, and it was a really good event. But we did that to build community, but seeing how many people were there, just like, I love people who do the work. Hmm. I love smart people who dig in and do the work. And we saw all those people doing the work, and it really touched me. And I do like to teach, but I'm a little resistant, you know, and, you know, like Cindy's so happy right now because she's always encouraged me to teach. And, you know, I'm just like, oh yeah, but I'm so begrudging about it. So it's not that we were not taking it seriously, but it was like, there was a little bit of obligation there, right? Like, yes, this is something we do, especially, you know, like last thing Dave wants to do half Fridays is get on the podcast, right? But he was very touched as well. Like, it really did mean something to all of us. And I've just leaned in. And not only have I leaned into the idea of, yes, this audience is looking for education, and yes, I want to help create those things, and yes, as a company, we're going to be responsible for the direction, or at least some of the direction that the industry goes. Like, I am actually at a point where not only am I comfortable stepping into that, I feel good about it. And I needed to feel it in my heart, because if I don't, then it's hard to get me to do anything I don't genuinely want to do. You know, I just, now that I genuinely want to do it, I'm doing it, you know, with my all. And I'm trying to think not just how can we create creative educational experiences, but how can we create experiences? Because I don't think that, I think you can learn without memory, but if you anchor learning with memory, I think it's crazy, crazy amazing. It's exponential. And so I want to create that type of experiential event. And that's what we want to do as, you know, as a company, but we're figuring out what that means. But definitely not just, you know, click here and you consume videos of information. Like, it's got to be something better than that.
Mm. Yeah. And I think what's happened in the author space, I mean, you know, I first didn't meet you, but knew of you back in the kind of copy blogger days and Johnny 1.0. And I think what's just happened is that online education has reached the author audience. Like, I keep getting emails that say, how come everyone's creating courses? And it's like, they're not suddenly doing that. People have been doing this for years.
Forever, yeah.
It's just actually reached this industry now. So yeah. I think it's an interesting, maybe authors are a little bit behind technologically, but you know, I think that's why it's happening. And I'm really glad that you guys are, you know, doubling down on that too. I also think from a business perspective, nonfiction income can be steadier, even though, like with fiction can be really hit and miss, can't it? Whereas nonfiction income can be a good steady baseline almost.
Well, yeah, for sure. And I do love the idea that, okay, well, by positioning ourselves in this way. So I was talking recently about, you know, everybody's launched something, everybody's launched something, but you know, there's a direct correlation. When you launch something, people know your name. Like that's what happens, right? You get on the actual radar, and we've never really launched anything. Like, we've done like our Kickstarters twice, but we've never actually gone on the map and launched and got partners and all of that. And so this is a new space for us, right? And we came up in this space. Mm-hmm. I understand the space intimately. So there are a lot of things that I don't love about the way it all works. And so, as we're going forward, as we're getting into the space, I also feel like people are paying attention to what we do and how we do it. And I feel like it's our job not to just to create the best product that we can and the best experience that we can, but to kind of toy with the launch model and to see like what can be done differently, and because how can we market with manners, and how can we make sure that, you know, people like the right people are finding it and the right people are participating in the launch for the right reasons. And so I'm really excited about that too, because like, we do that at Sterling and Stone. Marketing is part of our art. And so when we are creating our Story Sellers course for next year, we will, the actual marketing of that will be part of what the experience we want people to take away and how we want people to look at the way we do things.
No, absolutely. Now, already everyone's like, oh my goodness, you're doing so much. But one of the other things happening at Sterling & Stone is the development of Story Shop. Now, this is crazy, crazy stuff. So first of all, what is Story Shop?
Yes, so Story Shop is our attempt to, originally it was our attempt to build like a cool, almost like an add-on to Scrivener, where you could have all these planning tools and then export it and work in a Scrivener, because that was where our head was at the time. When we were originally conceiving of StoryShop, you know, we wrote in Scrivener and we were looking for ways to improve that experience and the pre-production process. But as happens with any idea, the more you like toy with it, the more it changes into something else. And this idea was always malleable. And now it's, you know, we're actually rethinking what modern writing software should be. Because it's not, if we really look at out there, there's like planning tools and there's digital typewriters. Like that's pretty much it. But is there anything that's really rethought from ground zero, like what is the writing and publishing experience? Like what should that be in the year 2016? It's different. And I feel like the tools that have been built so far are built on like preconceptions that are outdated. And so just rethinking that from the very, very start of like, how would a toddler approach this, right? Like someone who doesn't know anything about the way it's been, and they're asking these questions. And so we started with a survey and we just asked all of our users, like, you know, if you could have dream software, what would it be? And, you know, we internally at the company had our ideas, and Seth had already, we'd already marinated on all of those. But what we saw from the audience was a lot of crossover. A lot of crossover, and it's stuff that isn't available. And so we thought, how do we create this thing? And it's been kind of a nightmare because, you know, like it's been harder. Like we barely hit beta when we said we would, and it went out and it was a little rough. But it was, you know, it was a minimum viable product, and the clock hasn't started ticking on the backers who have their time. So it's all like, just use it for now. But then that we were going to build, it was originally planning tools that were going to be $10 a month. And then we thought, what we really need is actual writing software, because that's our biggest problem with Scrivener right now. Scrivener is an amazing tool. It's just a little outdated, and it was never meant to do the things that we're asking it to do. So it's not even fair. Like we're asking it to please let us collaborate, but the way it syncs, it's just not always right. And there are issues and we don't even know what's there. And anyway, it doesn't matter. We thought we would really love, you know, our own tool. And so, you know, Seth said, well, we could do it probably in a couple of years. You know, StoryShop has to pay for itself and all of that. And then we just kind of took a really big gamble and said, you know what, we're just going to pay for Writer to be done ahead of time. Since everybody can use it, then it can be free. And, you know, A, it's free for the wide community. But B, that gets a lot of people knowing about StoryShop. So it works too. So it's just a big gamble because we had to pay for that. And the Kickstarter money was all used to build the planner. Mm-hmm. So now we have to build this whole other piece to it out of pocket. And so there's like 9 developers working on it. And like it's you know, it's getting done. But yeah, it's been a whole thing, because once we realized that we're building Writer, it meant that Outliner had to be completely rebuilt, because it used the same core structure and it would fundamentally change the way the planner behaved. Mm-hmm. So we had to rethink the whole thing and basically start over after we'd already reached beta for the first thing. So the good news is what is being built is amazing, and I've seen the prototypes and I love them and I'm so, so happy and I can't wait. But the bad news is I'm refusing to give any dates, because it just like, I don't want to, I feel terrible that we have not delivered to the Kickstarter backers yet. And every day I'm like, okay, I hope this is the day. I hope this is the day. I'm going to know what's in a week. But I, they've been amazing. They've been super, super patient, and they keep telling Seth, high five, like, we know you're doing your best. But still, like,
hey, it's a Kickstarter. Day. Which Kickstarter delivers right on time?
Never. Like, I had a desk. My desk I bought on Kickstarter. It was delivered the day before I moved.
Yeah, I remember that story. But this is, okay, so let's just be more specific. So there is the StoryShop Writer would be similar to a Scrivener writing.
Like Scrivener.
No, and then there's Planner or Plotter. Is that the same as plotting, or is that pre-production?
It's Planner. And Planner will have like places for stories and, I mean, for your locations, for your outlines, for all of this. But it has a really interesting way of tagging things. So, you know, you can use @ and hashtags. And then when you're writing in your actual outline, you know, if you're a character in the story and it says @ Johanna, you know, you can click on that and a little drawer comes out and all their data is there. You can see how people have relationships with each other. You know, you can, the drawers slide out for whatever you're talking about, whether it's locations too. But then there's also things that you can label book parts. So let's say you're in the outline page, right? Mm. The way StoryShop works, it's just a blank page. So you just start writing and anything you label a book part as part of your outline gets a little tag. And there's a little toggle switch up in the right hand corner. And so when you're done with the outline, you click on that switch and it turns into your draft. Mm. And it will keep all of your book parts. And then the book parts become the rough draft that you work from. And when you're completely done writing that, you tick the toggle switch again, and it turns into publish. And then you can compile and do everything you need on that page, and then click publish and export it to Mobi or EPUB or PDF or whatever you need to. And it's gorgeous HTML. So it won't have any of the issues that, I don't know if you know about what's like on the look and sides. Yeah. So the HTML is really, really super clean. So we'll have beautiful, beautiful compiled books.
Yeah. Oh no, that's what, okay. So going back to the pre-production bit, because I think the plotting, I mean, let's face it, people can write in Scrivener, they can, you know, I'm using Vellum now to do my formatting, my ebook formatting because of that
I've
problem.
Heard amazing things about Vellum.
Yeah, Vellum's pretty cool. So those two things are kind of covered, but the thing that I, you know, with other tools, obviously having it all in one is very different, but the thing that really makes it stand out to me is this idea of the planning tool. So does that also have like genre tropes in? Like if people want to follow that right to market idea, will it have stuff like that?
It absolutely will. It won't on launch. But it absolutely will. So there'll be even buttons with like, you know, hero's journey. So like you can click on hero's journey and it fills in, or, you know, like romance, like has very specific, you know, flow to it. So you click on romance, you know, his perspective, romance, her perspective, or whatever. So yeah, over time. But the really cool thing about StoryShop too is we're building it in a way where the community will kind of dictate its direction. So eventually we're going to have a StoryShop marketplace, right? So let's say you love creating characters, but you hate writing, and there's somebody else who just loves writing, but oh my God, the world building can't stand it. There's a marketplace there. Somebody could sell their little packages. Okay, here's a whole world that I built. Who wants, like the Dungeons and Dragons crowd, right? They love to build worlds, but they're not writers. Worlds, but they could go sell a package for like $5,000, but it has 100 characters and like a whole world or whatever, right? So the community will help to drive that kind of thing. So whatever they're wanting as far as, okay, what are our planning tools going to be? We'll build that. Like we want to build really robust timeline stuff, blueprint makers. If you have like a haunted house, you could actually build the house out. That kind of stuff that just makes writing more enjoyable in the pre-production part.
Yeah, super fun. So that marketplace is very interesting to me because one of the problems with collaborations at the moment is if you don't have a company together like you and Johnny and Dave, then you have to kind of, one person takes on the publishing and then they have to be responsible for paying the other person for potentially years to come, you know, the life of the author, if you like, and afterwards. So will this marketplace, and obviously in the future, will this marketplace be a way to split payments between co-authors, for example?
Yeah, there'd have to be something set up on the back end. It's too far for me. Like I haven't dug in far at all, but I did talk to an amazing banker who just kind of understood this stuff a few weeks ago. And yeah, it's certainly possible. The model that I know exactly the model you're talking about, basically ACX for general purpose, right? Mm. Like, okay, it's basically a broker in the middle of two creatives. Like I can do this thing really well. I can do this thing really well. Okay, we'll take all the money and give you each your share. Something like that for our space, I think would be amazing. I definitely think it's a huge idea and I think it's a moneymaker. And it's the kind of thing like I would love to consult on, but I don't think I'd want to build.
Yeah, no, I keep thinking about it. I'm like, there's definitely money in this, but yeah.
It's like the dashboard that we've talked about. Like it's the same thing. And it's possible. Like we've talked, like once StoryShop is ticking, like there's a lot of other things we've talked about building with Seth, but you know, who knows what the market needs. And I think as with everything we built, the common denominator is we always build things for ourselves, right? Like what will make the company better? What will make the company better? What will make the company stronger? And therefore trickle down to the community, because that's really important. Like once what we learn, we broadcast. And so it's important to keep refilling that tank.
So we don't want to say what date it's going to be available, but if people is there a landing page people can go to?
Yeah, of course. It's getstoryshop.com, and we're very, very close. Like we're really close. I can't say a date because, oh my God.
If people are listening to this in mid-2017.
Oh, it's out. If it's not out, then I'm probably like, I jumped onto a freeway or something.
Because this is a really big project. I used to work in software testing. Yeah. I mean, this is like hell. I mean, there can be some nightmares there. So I really applaud you guys for taking on a project. I don't think you understood it, right?
Before. No, I didn't understand it. I'm actually glad I didn't know.
Yeah, you wouldn't do it.
I wouldn't have done it. I would have said the same thing about like trying to sell the screenplay. It was hard. And for the amount of money, it was like, okay, awesome. But that's not why. Like, it's knowing your why. And that was what made the screenplay feel like a celebration, right? Mm. It was because my why was I want to sell the screenplay, right? So that was enough. And this is like, we wanted to create this amazing thing. And like, I'm so grateful for where it is in the process that I don't feel like I have the right to be upset, because we had this dream. We asked our community to believe in the dream. They did. And now we're making the dream and doing well enough and believing in ourselves enough to fund the rest of the way. And that's just like kind of a magical place to be. And I don't want to disrespect it by like, oh, I wish it was done. Like, you know, but yeah, we're having Scrivener issues right now too. So it's like, oh, I wish it was done. But yeah. Well, I'm as eager as anyone.
Oh yeah, no, I'm a Kickstarter backer, so I'm looking forward to it. I think it's awesome. So, and we're almost done, but I wanted just to ask you, I mean, right at the beginning, you talked about plans for 2017, you talked about systems, we've talked about software and all these other things. Do you think that what is happening with you guys is reflective of the, I guess, maturity of the indie space? Because what I see from the outside now is you guys are not behaving like indie authors. You're running a company. You're not indie authors. You're basically running a story studio, which is what you wanted. That was your ambition. You know, most people are not doing it this way. So is that a reflection of how the whole industry's changed? Or what is your view of the indie market right now? Has it split into the professionals and the amateurs?
Oh, that is a great question. No, I don't think it's split, but I think it's jello. I think it's constantly like moving. And I think that there are people who are taking it more professionally, but I also think there's constant waves of new people, right? And I think there's also people who are moving over from traditional and they're thinking, okay, well, I'm going to try that. I'm going to dip my toe because I keep reading these stories, right? And so they want to come over. And I think there's a definite natural evolution. But I do think that it's not just because it's the indie space, it's just because it's the internet space, right? And the way things tend to move. But I feel like more indie authors or more people creating art in whatever way, there's going to be less boundaries and more blurred lines. Like, so maybe, you know, like my daughter loves Dan and Phil. Like, she just loves them, right? And they've got their tour and they just wrote their book. And I think there's going to be, you know, book people who do a lot on YouTube, and there's just going to be different ways that things are going to be more transmedia, right? We're going to create this franchise and okay, now it's a video game. And now I think that art is kind of just changing. Like, do you remember when Jewel wrote like her book of poetry and everybody laughed at her, right? Right. But she did. She published a book of poetry and she just kind of got like made fun of. And it's just like, I think that same artist now would have her songs on YouTube and she'd have a really devoted following. And then she would sell her book of poetry directly to her fans and it would be lauded. Like, they would love it because it's not competing at a Barnes and Noble, like to random passerby. It's like, it's different. So I think people who wouldn't produce art or wouldn't produce a book before may be encouraged to produce their version of a book, or vice versa. Maybe an author who would never have picked up a guitar and like sung a few songs may do that because his devoted audience wants to see what else he can do. And he has a thing for lyrics. Maybe he didn't have a great voice, so he never could have been a professional, but he can write a song and now selling directly to his people. So I just think that there's going to be more, more lateral thinking when it comes to like production and distribution.
All right. We're just pushing you a little bit further. In five years time, 10 years time, are you a traditional publisher? Is that are you Penguin? Great question.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I don't think so. And the reason why, and that is a great question. But first, I think that the idea of traditional has kind of changed. I don't think I could ever fit the definition of the old traditional. I also think what makes it different is that we're always going to be creating our own stuff. Mm. Like we're going to have a heavy, like we'll never create, make a lot of books. We'll always be boutique. Like we'll always be smaller. We'll be creating books that are having intention to be turned into film or have a screenplay written or have a video game attached. Or it's specific reason or a specific author. We're always going to be creating our own stuff in-house first, right? So anyone who's part of the Sterling and Stone family can publish within that. And that's probably going to keep us pretty busy. If we took other authors in, it would be, you know, case by case. But it would also have to fit into our larger library, where I think a traditional publisher is always just going to be looking for profitable books to publish. Mm-hmm. That's not what we're doing. We're building authors. We're building, and you know, that's happening in the apprentice program right now. There's two different, Jamie and Christine are both writing like books for Sterling and Stone for the first time. And we're working with them using all of our company resources to, you know, shape those books, but that's their books. Where we would nurture those from inside, we would never bring authors in from the outside and say, "Here, I have this book finished. Will you publish it?" I can't see that being part of our model at all. We're a story studio, not a publisher.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I just, you know, look at how far you've come in 5 years. And, you know, when I think where you could be in 5 years or 10 years, I think I'll be, you know, I was thinking I might pitch you my screenplay or something.
Well, see, but that's different because you know how relationship based we are,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So that's actually a good example of exactly what I'm talking about. Like, oh yeah, Joanna's, you know, she's extended family. Like, of course, like, because that's it. Like a traditional publisher wouldn't do things just because of extended family, but it's our story studio. We could do whatever we want. Right. And I think that's it. It always has to feel like family. Like we are more serious business minded now than we were a year ago. And I think that's good. I don't think it's just good for us. I think it's good for the industry. I think we're going to do some really great things and shake it up. And, you know, taking that responsibility is a good thing. But it's also, you know, on one end where we are getting more professional, I also think it's important to be even tighter and as much of a family as we can and stand by that ethic.
That is awesome. And of course, you were on the show 2 years ago, but you were on the show 2 years before that when you just put out Yesterday's Gone in a serial with Dave. And so I really want people listening to be encouraged by your journey. Because, and this is what's so great about podcasting, you know, and putting our life out there. Like your almanac, I'm a total listener to the almanac. I love it. This sort of behind the scenes of what's going on. And people listening, I mean, life changes over 4 years, right? You set these intentions, you do the work, and stuff happens.
Right. And even if it's not what you expect, it's always something. Like you're always moving forward. That's crazy to think that was, you know, 2 years ago and then 2 years ago. And 2 years from now is a long time.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I do think 2018 is our year.
Okay. Sure. Well, I want you back on the show end of 2018. And it'll be so cool to see what's happened.
I will be here, I promise.
Excellent. So where can people find you and Story Shop and the books and the podcast and everything online?
If you go to sterlingandstone.net, you can find pretty much everything there. You can find all the podcasts and stuff there. Story Shop, you should go to getstoryshop.com.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, Sean. That was great.
Of course. Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free Author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.